My name is Corey. I'm an addict.
There you go, Corey.
I want y'all to take a moment with me, please, and ask the God of my understanding and the God of your understanding to take away Cora, and that I'll be able to carry a clear and concise message of recovery and hope for not only myself and participate in my recovery, but whoever he wants me to reach tonight. So will y'all do that with me? Thank you. Amen. Now, that God that, my understanding, is just going to be God. So if I slip and say that word too many times and it offends you, please call your sponsor.
Call your sponsor.
Please call your sponsor. Foundation. Now, our literature tells us that the 12th tradition is the spiritual foundation of all our tradition. Everest reminds us, am I right or wrong? Where am I going? So let me go back and make sure I say it right, because I don't want to be that one with that misinformed information. It says, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Principles before personality is deep, real deep, because we all come in here, diversity is our strength, literature tells us that, but we have to make an adjustment. And the only way to make that adjustment is we got to go through the step working process. And I keep saying we, but I mean me. I had to go through the step working process, you know. There is no way to build any type of foundation unless you go through the process. The steps are the process. You know, I had to work through the issues that I had coming in here, prior coming in here, and the ones that I got while I was here. Before I could start practicing some traditions, you know. You know, some of the things I'm talking about, you know, Joe Blow, that has about 20 years or so in the program, and every time he shares about the same thing. You know, and I got that principle before a personality's got to step in, so I don't go over there and say, would you shut the up? You know, or when the new members open their mouth and do a drug law. You know, I got to allow them to do that because I'm not lodging in charge. God is running this thing. Or when they do the sniper share. People with time that wait in the meeting for you to share something, and they come behind you and just try to tear you down and stuff, you know. And so I got to work. I got to use the steps to make sure that I have a foundation so I don't act out. So the next thing I do, you know, what about when the clarity statement is just being read and the first addict that shares after the clarity statement says, come on, clean alcoholic. And, you know, our program is written so simply, you know. And, you know, we have these guidelines and the foundation and all of this, and it is a process. But, you know, that foundation begins with me. You know, I've got to be the one to keep my check, self in check. I'm the one that has to do that new behavior. You know, not to act out on what I would have said or done in the street. I've got to incorporate what's best for the whole of NA. So anonymity for me is not just, you know, I don't say your last name. What anonymity brings for me is that I surrender to being something greater than myself. It says that we're responsible to do the work and to embrace our membership. Yeah. You know, it says also that when we allow ourselves that privilege, we never have to do it alone again. That means that I might not be right all the time, or I might, you know, be right.
But, you know, when I accomplish a goal, we all accomplish a goal. You know, I have sponsees who are nurses. I have one who's an ordained minister and psychologist and all of that, you know. And I lived through them carefully because, you know, we did the work. You know, I was the one that was there, and they helped me through crisis. I helped them through crisis and stuff because we are family. And that's what family does. You know, we bond together, we stick together, and we share as friends strength and hope. That's all I got. That's all that this program gives me is my experience, my strength and hope. And I'm not here to help everybody. I understand that. I understand my role and my position and stuff, you know. I'm not a banquet speaker yet. I'm still a work in process, you know. I can handle this itty-bitty stuff like this, you know, because I got a big brother right here. 35 years, he got me. Okay? Where I fall short, he got me. And I'm so grateful that God of my understanding designed it that way. Because last Thursday, I had a procedure. I was telling them about last Thursday, I had a procedure. And because of the lifestyle, because of the age, whatever, you know, I'm having to fix little things on my body. I got to have some work done on my eye. I got to have some work done on my knee, you know. And last week, they scraped my sinuses. So I've been in this fog all week long, and I've been here, rum. So we went to eat, then went up to the room and everything, and I was sitting there, you know, calming myself down, getting ready for this workshop. And I blew my nose, and some big thing came out. It was like a piece of afterbirth or something. I'm like, wow. But I'm so grateful, y'all. Y'all don't know how good I feel. Whoa, to be able to breathe, you know, it's like one side of my face, you know, it felt as though, you know, I'm talking in a vacuum and all of this, and it's like, that's freedom. God did that exactly at the moment that I needed. You know, I don't have to look real far for the miracles, you know, of what he does for me, you know, it's like, I can see them. I can identify them. And I've been here long enough to recognize that it is him. Yeah. It's not the power within me. It's the power that he gives me. He speaks through me. So when I start talking about the spiritual principles and all that, you know, some days I'm so spiritual that I can't stand myself. I'm so one and great and thou and art and all that. And then there's those days where don't talk to me, don't touch me, don't you come near me, don't you say nothing to me. But see, y'all accept me either day. So a lot of times, you know, I have this nickname in my group, and they say, oh, so Coke out here tonight is, yeah, she here, what? What you want? What you want to talk about? But I'm grateful that because of the spiritual foundation, because I've developed one, most of you all have developed one too, that we can accept each other's differences. Yeah. You know, we can be okay with who you are, and I can be okay with who I am. I'm sitting in a meeting and hear that old timer with the 20-some years start talking about cleaning over. I can sit there and listen to that newcomer talk about, you know, that drug log or all that, and somebody talking about the cat died, or, you know, they didn't get enough to eat, or the children are getting on their nerves. I can sit there because I'm at home. You know, family does that stuff, you know. There's a lot of things, the discussions and talks and stuff that go on in family and stuff that don't make any sense to anybody else. But I can come in here and tell y'all the most outrageous stuff, and you can identify. You know, there's one in here that's going to identify. Now, I'm not saying everybody, but one in here knows what I'm talking about. They were asking me a little while ago about, you know, I was talking about the Jackson's crisis, and we live right outside of Jackson. And they were saying, well, where exactly is that? I said, that way. And they kept saying, well, it's north, south, east, west. I said, it's that way. Whatever way that is, you know, from Jackson right here, that's where we are. And that's the best I can do with that. You know, a lot of the things that I lost along the way that I'll never get back. But I'm so glad that God has replaced them with the things that he has. You know, I came into this meeting, into this fellowship in 2001. And I have lived a life of dereliction before then. We talk about the animalistic level that we get to. You know, my little husband over there, you see him, he was instrumental in me getting here. We met in a crack house. And at that time, I had been through the fellowship before. I had sat there and I had concentrated on the differences rather than the similarities. I was better than you. Yeah, I didn't know what y'all were talking about. Y'all just don't have enough willpower. Y'all just get me. You know, my family is too important for this. You know, where I came from. It's too, no. I'm not an addict. I can't just use that one, though, that has me crawling on the floor and picking up stuff or hiding in the closet, and unable to come out. But I'm not an addict. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with me, except I just need to stay away from that one. So when I got to the end of the road, we all know about the end of the road. It says that either I go on to the bitter end, or do I try a new way of life? I had been introduced, and as I said before, the women that came in and gave all those horror stories, never. But I went past all of that. And so now I'm whipped. I am whipped totally. I'm here in a fetal position. And we start talking about a spiritual foundation. I don't have no foundation. I don't have nothing. I'm just a lost, vacant soul. But that night, that last night of using, I got on my knees that morning when I came to. I went through a horrible experience that last night. But when I came to that next morning, I got a chance to look in the mirror. And I saw me for who I was. I looked back and I saw a demon with no feelings, no form or fashion that would identify as being human. And God, I began to cry. I began to cry for my soul because I could not fathom living another day, another hour, another minute, another second if I had to live like that. So the first thing I did was try to find something to end the pain. I was going to commit suicide, but there wasn't nothing I could do, nothing I could find that I could do it with. Because, I was going to have to die pretty. No, I didn't want to be in no pain or nothing, I just wanted to just shoot and go.
Yeah.
But the second thing that came in was God heard my heart. He reached in and I got on my knees for the first time in, I don't know ever how long. And I cried out and I said, God, please help me. And he told me in a quiet, still voice, he said, I sent you some help last night. So you remember that guy that came into the crack house, the one that you immediately resented? The one that had that little glow about himself and stuff? You could tell when somebody's in this program, even if they got and he had 11 months then. That's a glow. That's a change. That light is on in the gut of the stomach. That light is on and you can see that light. And I instantly couldn't stand them because I heard all those cliches and stuff y'all talked about and all those things and stuff, and I was instantly mad with him. But I did have his phone number. And I got on my knees, did that prayer, got up, went to the phone. And in that time, y'all, you know, I didn't know Narcotics Anonymous. I knew that, you know, when I was in treatment and facing, I remembered Beagle and Bob. And I remember how therapeutic it was that they just talked to each other. You know, they identified and they were there to share with each other, you know, the pain. And that's where I gleaned from. I called him and I told him, I said, I don't want any money. I don't want, you know, no type of relationship and stuff. Would you talk to me? Would you just talk to me? And God used that man and he said that if you're serious, you really want some help, I'll be there for you. I'll help you and I'll be there for you. And so, you see my little husband over there. And he took me to his sister's house. I called my daughter and asked her if I could probably stay with her. And she said, Mama, I don't know. You know, where I had gone to, she wasn't sure where she could trust me with her kids, her house, or any of this. So I'm homeless, I'm helpless. And all I could say was, baby, I understand. Because at one time, she was my biggest enabler. And so he took me to his sister's house and he said, would you like to take a shower in here? And I said, yes. And as you see, he gave me a pair of shorts to put on. It's 21 years difference, okay? Okay. But anyway, he gave me a pair of shorts to put on. And as I came out of that bathroom, my husband was on his knees praying for me. I heard him call out my name. And I stopped praying and I asked God to help me. And he's been with me ever since. You know, my spiritual foundation has grown. You know, it started off with that little tiny sense, you know, that mustard seed thing, you know. I trusted from what I saw from him that maybe this time I could do it. I trusted that when I got to the rooms and I heard people sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and the women who were sharing about things that they had done, went through and had came through clean, I began to have some hope. I began to believe that I was at home. Because you all accepted me, even in, with the craziness. You all accepted me, you embraced me, and you told me, welcome home. I'm grateful to have had that opportunity. I'm grateful every day that I'm still here and living on unmerited favor. I know that. No, because I said, like the health issues I had, and my age and everything, people around me are passing, you know, younger than I am, or some a little older than I am. And most of them don't have the issues that I have, but they're gone. So I know my purpose is still here. God has something that he still wants me to do. And I came here, you know, to share about the spiritual foundation and the 12th tradition. But see, I've met some people since I've been here. How about it might have been that he just wanted me to come here to be that vision of hope for that person, you know? I don't know. But whatever the reason is, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful for you all allowing me to share. And with that, I'll keep coming back.
Right. I'm praying. I'm an addict.
Hey there.
And they gave us this topic, spiritual foundation, you know. And, you know, I knew what they were talking about, the 12th tradition, you know. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of our traditions, you know. It's kind of it in a nutshell, you know. In this, I love this book. Guiding Principles. I actually got this book at the World Convention in Orlando. I think I had the most clean time at the table, and I ended up with this book. Everybody signed it. I was looking at it today, and it's really cool, you know, all the friends and what they had to say. And that's our anonymity. You know, that's anonymity. You know, anonymity means that I used to love Jimmy Kay listening to his speaker tapes because he really expressed how there's no big chiefs in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. There's no kings, no rulers, you know. Nobody knows everything, you know. We're all equal. There's nobody in here any, you know, more intelligent, but as far as getting clean and helping each other stay clean, nobody can do that any better than any of the rest of us, you know. We're all on the same playing field. We all been there and done that, you know. That's what makes us unique as addicts, you know. That outside world out there, people that aren't addicts, they don't understand. They can't really help us, you know. They can try. They try their ass off, you know. But it don't work, you know. I know I tried everything in the world to get clean before I got here. And it was always after something really bad happened, you know, after I overdosed or, you know, my wife at the time overdosed, was in a coma for a few days. And we said, golly, you know, you get real spiritual when something like that happens, you know. And, you know, and that'd get us clean for a couple of weeks, and then we'd be right back at it, you know. Busted, felony possession, you know. Cost a hell of a lot of money to get out of jail, you know. Attorney fees and all that. We said, that's enough, you know. It lasted about 2 weeks, you know. That's all it would last, you know. It all started with that one drug. I'm just going to use one, you know. And one's not enough, man. I'm an addict, you know. I can't get enough, you know. And we all know, you know, when I was saying that just then, I saw a bunch of heads going, Yeah, I can relate to that, you know. That's anonymity. That's us in the nutshell, you know. We all know what that's like, you know. And if you don't know what that's like, you know, you're probably not an addict, you know. And so, therefore, you don't have the empathy, you know, that we have for each other, you know. I'm no worse than you, you know, and you're no worse than me, you know. We're all on an equal plane, you know. It don't matter what race we are, religion, none of that stuff matters in Narcotics Anonymous. That's what makes this program so special, you know. The only requirement for membership is the desire to quit using, you know. And I don't know, there's not anything out there like it, you know. it's amazing how God works through this fellowship, you know. One addict helping another. It's without parallel, you know. And, you know, my clean date's June 16th, 1987, you know. I never thought that this would work for me. You know, my first meeting I came to, I wasn't ready. You know, I went because my wife at the time was in treatment and she's wanting me to go to this stupid meeting, you know. And so I went. And I thought, man, that's a bunch of sick people, you know. and then she wanted me to pick up a desire chip or tag back then, or a token. And so I got it just to please her. And, man, everybody wanted a hug. They wanted to give me their phone numbers and all this stuff. I was like, I can't wait to get out of here, you know. But that meeting really screwed me up, man, screwed my using up. And then it wasn't a few months later, I ended up, you know, in the program, you know. And it took a few weeks for me to become willing to surrender, you know. But I was sick, and I'd been sick and tired a long time ago, you know, a long time before I quit, you know. I just didn't think that this would work. I didn't think this was the answer, you know, until I heard other people just like me in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous sharing my story, you know, sharing their story with me. And me relating to that story, you know. And I was like, wow, if they can do it, maybe I can do it. Maybe there is something to this, you know. I didn't really believe until, you know, I came to believe, you know. I didn't believe at first. I just kept showing up, you know, and it started working, you know. The light started coming on. And this became the most important thing in my life. That's 35 years ago. And it's still the most important thing in my life. You can ask my wife. You can ask my kids. You can ask my friends. You know, everybody that knows me knows Narcotics Anonymous is my spiritual foundation.
That's right.
You know, people ask me, you know, I grew up in church. You know, my parents drug me to church every time the doors open. You know, I really didn't want to be there. You know, and I thank God for that. I thank God I had real good parents. You know, I can't blame none of this on my parents. You know, they'd look at me and like, what happened? You know, neither one of my parents ever used. You know, they couldn't figure it out, and I couldn't either. You know, but you know, the way this program works blows me away, and it blew my parents away. You know. You know, because of this fellowship, I got to give my parents back a lot of years clean before they passed, you know. And I was here I was with them when they passed, you know. And it's all because of the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, you know. It's all because of the anonymity of the program, the foundation. It talks about it in here. A foundation is based on something is built. The foundation stands under a structure, securing it to providing a steady footing. Our spiritual foundation grounds us and keeps us secure. You know, I thank God for my predecessors. We just got back from Hawaii, and I'm suffering from jet lag right now, so bear with me. But my sponsor lives in Hawaii, lives on the Big Island in Hawaii, and he celebrated 50 years back in October, and he's suffering from dementia, you know, and you know, I told him a few months ago, I said, I want to make it out there to see him. And, you know, so I told him, I said, I'm not going to be able to go until August the 28th. And he said, I don't know if I'll be alive then, you know. I said, well, Tom, I don't know if I'll be alive then, you know. All we got today. And we both laughed. And, you know, the dementia's hitting him pretty hard. He's in hospice, you know. He can't be alone by himself. And so we went out there. And it was really cool. I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to do that, you know. And, we got to spend 5 days with him, you know, and you know, he's been real isolated and because of COVID and all that, and I think that has a whole lot to do with his mental condition. But you know, we ended up having a meeting in his garage, you know, and us and another couple went with us out there, and then one of his caretakers is a sponsee, you know, there in Hawaii. And so we had our little meeting in his garage, you know. And that's the first meeting he had, other than Zoom, in a long, long time, you know. And I could see the light coming on back in his eyes. Just the personal hugs that we gave him, you know. Two of us had to get COVID. We COVID tested right there in the garage, made sure we didn't have COVID. And, you know, but we got to hug him. And he really, really missed that, you know. And it was really cool. And, you know, he had me working on his generator and all kinds of stuff. You know. But, you know, I called him days after that, and one day I called him, he was really down, you know. And he was almost crying, because he was having a real bad day, And then last time I talked to him was Wednesday, right before we flew home. And he was back to himself, It was like, wow, Tom, killer. And him and his wife are planning on going to the regional convention there in Hawaii at the end of October. I think it's awesome, I wish I could be there. But, it's, thank God for him. Thank God for our predecessors, the people. Thank God for Jimmy Kay. Thank God for the guys and the women that were here and held this thing together, so that when I got here, it was here, because this is the only thing that got me clean, Like I said, I tried everything else, and it didn't work, anonymity is us doing, it removes I and we become we, I love the tradition 12 in the basic text, Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all the traditions and reminding us to place principles before personalities. A dictionary definition of anonymity is a state of bearing no name. In keeping with tradition 12, the I becomes we. The spiritual foundation becomes more important than any one group or individual. Everything in Narcotics Anonymous is group consciousness. It's a consciousness. I love the service prayer. In Narcotics Anonymous, whenever we meet for business, one of the first things we do is we read this service prayer. I love it. God grant us knowledge that we may write according to your divine precepts, instill in us a sense of your purpose. Make us servants of your will and grant us a bond of selflessness, that this may truly be your work, not ours, in order that no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. That's real powerful. And I'll tell you what, I've been in business meetings when we didn't do that, and you can tell the difference, God works through us as a committee, as a consciousness, That spirit, that spiritual foundation, that's God working through us, And when we abide by those principles, it's amazing what we can do, Golly, since I've been clean, I met my sponsor, Paul. I was sponsoring Paul at the time, and we had the Lone Star region. Back then, we were part of the Lone Star region, And we had the Lone Star Regional Convention in Galveston. That was the first convention I was a part of. That was in 1990. And we invited Tom to come speak, and that's when I met my sponsor. That the main meeting, Saturday night meeting, we had over 1,000 addicts in the Moody Civic Center. That's how big that thing was. We filled the Galvez Hotel completely, and we had to move people over into the flagship motel, that was very powerful, And then Tom got up and spoke, and, he had just got back from India, taking the message over to India, on his own. The World Service Office had sent some trusted servants over to India because addicts were over there and they didn't have any literature, and they wrote the World Service Office. So the World Service Office sent 6 trusted servants over to India to try to find these addicts to help them out, They went over and they couldn't find them, Tom was on the committee that wrote this book here, It Works How and Why. And he was out there as they were writing this book, and overheard that conversation, you know, and it hit his heart. You know, he was like, I need to go find those addicts. And that's the way he is. And, you know, he came home. And him and his wife are in bed. And 2:00 in the morning, he wakes up. And it's like God said, go to India, you know. So he woke his wife up, said, B, I'm going to India. She said, go back to sleep, you know. And he gets up and he says, no, I'm going to India, you know. He packed his bags. Out the door he went. And he went to India. And, you know, in about 4 hours, he found those addicts in India, you know. And it was really cool. It's a long story. But it's amazing what happens, you know, when we put out the effort to carry this message to the still suffering addict, you know. And, you know, and it's... We can't do it. We can do it. I can't do it alone. We got to have that group consciousness. We got to have that consciousness, you know. I'm real involved in H&I. Been involved in H&I for a long time. And take meetings into prisons, you know. And, you know, it's tough. It's tough dealing with TDCJ, you know. And it's tough getting addicts to volunteer to go, you know. And then when you... To try to get both of those working, man, it gets real tough, you know. And a lot of times I get real frustrated, you know, because I'm the one trying to make that happen, you know. But when I express my concern, go to that H&I committee meeting, and us as a committee talk about it, next thing I know I've got several of my people volunteering to go, you know. And all of a sudden TDCJ is wanting to work with us, you know. You know, I got to get out of the way. It's got to become we, you know. And, you know, thank God for this fellowship. I don't know how much time we got?
You, sir, have 12 more minutes.
I got 12 more minutes? 12. Really? Okay. I thought I was going over. I heard all the conversation out there. I was like, golly. So, you know, it's amazing what we can do, you know, that. I was telling you about the convention that we had in 90, and, you know, I was real new in recovery, and I started out as being the marathon meeting coordinator. I thought I was somebody, you know. They gave me a radio, you know, and my job was to coordinate the marathon meetings, you know. And then our program chairperson was killed in an accident, and... And my sponsor at the time ended up moving up into the position of the programming chair. And so I became the vice chair, you know, and that's how I got involved in that. And being a part of that convention meant so much to my recovery, you know. Another thing that, you know, talking about spiritual foundation, I'll tell you what, the Texas Unity Convention, you know. I don't know how many of y'all ever made the Texas Unity Convention, you know. It's really a neat experience. It happens 4 times a year out there at Lake Whitney. You hear people say the Whitney Convention. It's not the Whitney Convention. It's the Texas Unity Convention, Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And it's a real neat experience. You know, that was my first convention I went to. And I had probably had about 4 or 5 months clean, and really wasn't wanting to go. I wouldn't want to be around. You know, I was fine with just my little old group there I was making meetings at, you know. I didn't want to meet too many other people, you know. I wasn't into all that. But these others wanted to go, so we jumped in the car and went out there. And, man, we pulled up, got out of the car, and here come these people wanting to hug, you know. And I was like, men, you know. I was like, I didn't mind hugging the women, but the men, I wasn't into that yet, you know. And, but it didn't take too long. You know, after about the 30th hug from a guy, I realized he wasn't hugging me for any sexual favors, you know. It's because he loved me and he cared about me, you know. And that felt really good, man. I tell you what, the spirit of love that I witnessed there at the Texas Unity Convention, just fresh in recovery, meant so much to my early recovery, you know. And, you know, I got addicted to the Whitney's. We got through that Whitney and we come rushing home to tell everybody about it. Couldn't wait till the next Whitney. I had remembers that, you know. I had an old Dodge van. When it rained outside, it rained inside, you know. But we'd load people up in that old van, and we'd have meetings all the way up there. And golly, it was powerful, you know, real powerful. And you know, it's all about us coming together for that common purpose, you know, like that common cause of let's stay clean today, you know, let's help each other stay clean today, you know, and getting rid of the personalities, the principles before personalities, yeah. You know, it's so neat how this program works, you know, if it wasn't for the program, there's a whole bunch of you in here I wouldn't be sitting next to, you know, if it wasn't for the program, you know. And there's a whole bunch of y'all would say, ain't no way you'd be sitting next to me, you know. But because of recovery, we've put those personalities out to the side, and we're to the principles, you know. And it don't matter what country you come from, what language you speak, what color you are, none of that matter. What sex you are, you know, we love each other. You know, because the empathy that we have for each other, you know. And that's what this anonymity is all about, you know, the spiritual foundation of this fellowship, you know. It's powerful, man. I feel sorry for those people out there that don't get to experience this, you know. People, I retired 2.5 years ago. Because of the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, I got to retire, you know. But I worked in a chemical plant in Freeport, and you know, we get recovery in us, and people see, they notice that. They know something strange about that guy, you know.
Yeah.
And whenever they're going through tough stuff, who do they come to, you know? You know, it's really cool. I never broke my anonymity at work, you know. It got broken. I didn't break it, you know. And it was okay when it got broken. It didn't scare me, you know. I'm also a boat captain. I run boats, you know, and I don't go around telling everybody I'm a drug addict on a boat, you know, on a yacht. I ran dinner cruise yachts over in Clear Lake, and I'll never forget one time I had to do the safety speech, you know, before we'd leave the dock. You know, this boat hold 140 people, you know, a big boat, and I got up there doing my safety speech, you know, and I said, I'm Captain Perry, and I'm an addict. You know, I was like, oh, gee, you know, golly. And, of course, they all just laughed, you know, thought I was joking. And then Mike Latouche, a DJ on the boat, one time he's the character, and he didn't know I was in the program. But he started this big spiel introducing me to them that, yeah, we got your captain here today. He's an alcoholic, you know. And I'm like, what? He don't know that I'm an addict, you know. You know, I'll tell you, this program has given me opportunities that are just unbelievable. Unbelievable, you know. Before I got here, I was worthless. To me and everybody else, I was nothing but trouble, you know. My parents said, get out of here. We're tired of you, you know. Everybody, you know, even my using buddies, you know, they disowned me, you know, because cops are chasing me everywhere I went, you know. But, you know, since I got clean and you know, it's amazing what happens. I even got to take the... They called me up and asked me if I'd run the boat and take the King of Norway down the Houston Ship Channel. They wanted to show him all the where his ships come in and dock, you know. And sure, they did a background check on me and all that, and I passed, you know. And I got to meet the King of Norway, and the whole time I was thinking, if he only knew, you know, if he only knew, you know. But You know, the opportunities back in April, I got asked to bring a boat from Costa Rica through the Panama Canal, and that was something on my bucket list, you know. And since I've retired, I've got this big bucket list, things I want to do. And that was one of them. This guy out of the blue called me up, said, "Hey, can you bring my boat from Costa Rica back to Texas?" Sure, I can do that, you know. And I got to do that. And not only that, I got to bring my wife with me, you know. And that was a miracle. I didn't know if she was going to be able to come or not until I got down to Costa Rica and took them fishing and all this stuff and got it all squared away. And him and his buddies were flying back to Texas, so it's just going to be me and the deckhand I had from Mexico on the boat. And I said, "Hey, can I fly my wife out here?" "Sure," you know. So she got to go with me, you know. She got to catch her first marlin ever, and it was a 300-pound black marlin off the coast of Capas, Costa Rica. And then we got around to the Gulf of Mexico, and she caught a 300-pound blue marlin before we got to Texas, you know. But, you know, God's awesome. He's so awesome, you know. When we get out of the way, and I'm closing. When we get out of the way and let God, you know, it's amazing. And that's what we're doing, you know, practicing these spiritual principles. You know, it's all about getting out of the way and letting God, you know. And I'm glad to be here. Thank y'all.
Yeah.